afternoon, and welcome back to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten, and I'm glad you could join us this afternoon. It was a shocker, no doubt about it. Last week, Minnesota 4th District Democrat Congressman Bruce Vento, who seemed to be a picture of good health, announced that he has been diagnosed with a deadly form of lung cancer and would not be running for re-election this fall. Instead, Mr. Vento, who has represented the St. Paul area in Congress for the past 24 years, will be devoting his energies to fighting the disease. Bruce Vento has made a name for himself as one of Congress's leading environmentalists. He's become an expert in the often arcane world of finance and banking legislation. He's been credited with leading the fight for federal legislation to help the homeless. And over the years, he has been a consistent voice for traditional, mainstream, liberal causes. As you might imagine, since news of Congressman Vento's illness became public, the accolades have poured in, praising him and thanking him for his long career of public service. Today, Congressman Bruce Vento has come by our studios to talk about his career and also to take your questions, and we do invite you to give us a call here. Our Twin City area number is 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free. That number is 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Our guest this hour, Minnesota 4th District Congressman Bruce Vento. Congressman Vento, thank you for coming in today.
Oh, thanks, Gary. Happy to be here.
Wish it was under different circumstance, but...
Well, I got a lot of challenges ahead of me in terms of the fighting this illness, and so I decided quickly after learning of this to step back and explain to my constituents and to others that I was going to try to fulfill whatever I could do in terms of my term this year, and I think I can do a lot, and let some others run in the election process, which is always intense for me. And will be, sure I'm certain, this year for them, and to try and use my energies to deal with this malignant mesothelioma that I've been hit with. Actually, it is more described as a chest cancer, I guess, than a lung cancer. It probably will affect the lung and affects shortness of breath, but the good news about it is it's operable cancer. The bad news is it's operable, so I got to go through it and then through probably some chemo and some radiation in the months ahead. But I'm buoyed really by the great expression of support and concern that has come out really on a bipartisan basis this past week since having made that announcement, and really it's been quite uplifting in terms of and I think there is a spiritual part really of health and a physical part, and as you can see from the physical part, I've done my part. I did my 3 miles around Phalen Lake today, walking for a change. But anyway, I feel really good about it and the support of my family and friends. It's really been a wonderful experience, something really I didn't expect in terms of making the announcement, but I've been very gratified and thankful for it.
Did you have any inkling whatsoever that you were sick?
No, I think that's one of the problems of being a little physically active is you probably mask over some of the very casual characteristics of this. Maybe I've always had sort of, as a youngster, I had polio in 1944 in the epidemic. No side effects, thank God, that I knew of, and had some pneumonias along the way. But generally, I've been blessed with really good health in my adult life, other than some maybe a few extra bouts of pneumonia, which may have been indicative. You know, this mesothelioma, which I have been hit with now, is really can go back 30 or 40 years to my blue-collar days from the age of 18. I mean, literally, you know, or really from the before that, setting pins at bowling alleys and working at the St. Paul Hotel and on the factories of the east side of St. Paul. I could, the best job, of course, was the brewery. In those days, it was a little different than today, but, you know, they say if you work in a creamery, you drink milk, you know. So, anyway, we were all adults and we handled it pretty well. But anyway, it was, I really enjoyed my blue collar days and the type of training and opportunity to work and go to school and support my family, for the first, from the age of 15 really through the age of 30, and then being elected to the legislature then and serving continuously between the state legislature and Congress for the last 30 years, 24 years in Congress. Is this year is my 24th year. It's really been very really rewarding. But I think it's those working years probably where I came in contact with that with the asbestos fibers, which are strongly associated with the mesothelioma.
I don't mean to pry, but if I might, what are the doctors saying? I mean,
well, they're you know, as I say, they're saying it's operable, which, as I said, is good, and that there's a chance. I've got a shot at beating it, so it's obviously not it's not the sort of thing where it's completely correctable by simply a surgery, and so there is the element of unknown in terms of how every individual, I think, responds to it and the degree to which I will respond to that, to the regimen and protocols that they have. So there are no guarantees. I just think we're all going to die someday. I just know that one of the factors in that that is going to be contributing to my problems is of course, this illness that I now have, this cancer.
Minnesota 4th District Congressman Bruce Vento has joined us this hour. And in case you missed the news last week, Congressman Vento announced that he won't be seeking re-election. He got the diagnosis that he has cancer and will be devoting his energies to trying to fight that disease. Congressman Vento has come by today to talk about his career in Congress and take your questions. Give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. Before we get to our callers, I did want to ask you, I noticed the St. Paul Pioneer Press in its editorial comment described you as being an old Democrat in a new Democrat era. Is that pretty accurate?
Well, I think so. I'm sort of an unreconstructed Federalist, as I describe myself. I was sort of brought up in the era of the national government being able to play a role and to have an impact on our lives. And I think, frankly, I think it's more pragmatism than anything else. I think there's so many problems that affect our lives that need a strong national government role, a responsible role, but a strong national government role. That doesn't mean every program that's passed nationally is good. It means that there's a necessity. And I think as you look down the litany of things that affect our lives, whether it's health care or retirement programs, the strong ERISA laws that exist in terms of even trying to insure private pensions, the type of education, obviously, at the higher education, the national government, by and large, I mean, with the exception of a few states, is the higher education is a national government role. The loans, the grant programs, the scholarship programs, you know, almost every aspect of our life in terms of the environment, clearly, air and water pollution don't know state boundaries, much less international boundaries. And so I just think that pragmatically we ought to recognize that the role that the national government has to play, and I've always seen it as a basis of empowering and investment in people and trying to represent them in this forum.
What do you suppose happened to the word liberal?
Well,
I mean, it used to be folks like yourself wore that label proudly, and now even your fellow Democrats are running away
because people have demonized it is really what's happened. So it was a degeneration. Now you have to talk to a logical positivist or a rhetorian. I can't, but all I know is that if liberal means you're supporting the Social Security program and the health care programs and education and investment in people and labor, I plead guilty if that's what I think most obviously, though, have tried to portray it as being somewhat of a failed philosophy. But I think that getting to beyond the words and getting to the actions is where it's really at. And I just think, you know, from a practical standpoint, the national government has to play this role even on an international basis in terms of, and I think the environmental issues, which I've always been so interested in because of my science background. Gary, I taught science for 10 years in the Minneapolis public schools, and consequences teaching is you really learn this stuff. And the fact is that I see that as being such an important issue in the future in terms of our international sphere, whether it's our oceans or the long-range transportation of air products and so forth, that we really have to come to grips with that and play a role. And you can't renege, you can't back away from it. I think we need to face up to that. That's why I'm so concerned about programs and the national policies and the reluctance of Congress to deal with something like the Kyoto Accords. It may not just be right, but I think it's a step. It's really where we have to deal with it. Treaties on Antarctica, landscapes protection, And we need to do more. We need to put teeth in many of those international protocols and laws that we have that I had worked to try to establish issues dealing with rainforests, which probably you wouldn't associate me with, but trying to get the National Forest Service and our national government and resources to focus. In fact, one of the reasons I was so anxious to go to Cuba with the St. Thomas baseball team was to try and facilitate communication. The Cubans have among the best tropical rainforest research in the Western Hemisphere, largely because of the Eastern German influence that has occurred there. And we have some natural ties that could occur between them and our National Forest Service and our research that we're doing.
Minnesota 4th District Congressman Bruce Vento is our guest this hour. Again, if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call here, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. First caller is from Rochester. Dale, go ahead, please.
Hi. Congressman, first and foremost, I want to wish you well. You were my seventh grade science teacher way back in 71, 72 at Nokomis Junior High in Minneapolis.
Wow.
And
what's your last name, Dale?
Heltzer.
Oh, Heltzer.
I was the blind kid who sat in the back of the class. Wow. I wasn't much of a student back then, but I got much better later.
Good. Well, I didn't have a completely negative impact on you.
No, not at all. But I just, again, I want to wish you well You've kind of spoken about the importance of environmental issues and so on, particularly now that microorganisms have kind of been taken care of, well, more or less, and our life expectancy has gotten much greater than it was 100 years ago. Now our own impact on the environment is kind of endangered our well-being, and I just want to add to what you're saying about the importance of our attention to what we do to our environment and ultimately to ourselves.
Well, I'll take credit for this, student. thanks, Dale, for your question and your well wishes. I think he's exactly right. I think we need to put, the more emphasis in terms of research, in terms of retroviruses and some of the leading aspects we have in terms of human health, in terms of the overall health of the ecosystem. You know, even these rainforests, a lot of the medicines and drugs that we accomplish, almost half of them come from these biologically diverse ecosystems such as the tropical and temperate rainforests that we're talking about. But it is, I think, going to be increasingly an important issue. And unfortunately, I think most of life expectancy has dealt with the childhood diseases. Some of the tougher stuff like I'm facing, we can do some things for it, but we still have a long way to go to deal with some of these serious problems. And so it's a lot of dough, and it's going to require our attention and prudent investment.
Do you get the sense, Congressman, that sometimes it seems like we are just kind of feeling our way along on so many of these complicated scientific issues? We're talking about asbestos and asbestos yes. fibers yes. and the rest, and of course this was seen as a great fire retardant, and when it first came on the scene, people were, boy, this was a great breakthrough.
Yeah. Well, I think that, some of these illnesses like I have are considered orphan diseases because they're so rare. I think they may become more common, that's my guess, as we go down the road in the future. But, I've seen my friends on the Appropriations Committee wrestle trying to figure out the right budget for the National Institute of Health and for the National Cancer Institute and others that they support. It really is very tough. All of a sudden, a disease you have like AIDS or caused by, again, a retrovirus. So there's so many things that we need to, and obviously the United States puts the dollars in. We put it in through international type of efforts going on with some of the study and research. And I always explain the job in Congress is to take new knowledge and translate it into public policy. And insofar as we can be instrumental in developing some of that new knowledge, that's also important. But that's not we need to really let the scientists lead. in terms of this, rather than have the us, as even the politicians that may understand a little bit about it, really have to understand our own limitations and try to put the resources where they will, in fact, lead to the greater amount of knowledge and understanding of our of disease, of illness, and of scientific information that we need to, in fact, keep in balance in terms of our ecosystem and Earth.
Mark, your comment, please.
Yes, Mark Toogood calling to thank the congressman for his leadership on children's issues for the last 24 years. And in the vein that he was just talking about, in fact, we worked together on an oral rehydration therapy solution for children in the third world, which cost a few pennies to make, but could save millions of lives. And just, you know, want to acknowledge the many Saturday forums and early mornings and, oh, all the hard work that you've done.
Well, thanks. Thanks a lot, Mark. Mark is a good friend and a real leader in terms of children's issues himself. And quite candidly, it's efforts like his and many others for Bread for the World and others that had taken an active interest in many world health problems and that try to build the type of support and coalitions that mean that we can pass and enact funding and policies on a national basis. And so he should, I'm glad to have taken the lead and be in a position where I could, in fact, act on some of what I think are our common goals as a nation, as a community. But children's, you know, and issues in giving kids and addressing the problems of children on a global basis is very important. And as we're finding, this globe is shrinking. A lot of the issues are really within our own communities today with individuals that are here that we probably didn't expect to be here, such as Southeast Asians and other communities have similar phenomena. So, in fact, I was reading a statistic where it pointed out that 1 in 10 people in the United States were not born here, which is sort of remarkable. I mean, it is, especially in the, as we're into the this new new century, this new millennium, we probably would have expected that number to be accurate in the early part of the 20th century. I doubt that many would suspect it to be the case today, but it is, and I think we have to realize that. So dealing with these problems, either in their place in Africa or Southeast Asia, is really, in fact, dealing with them right at home.
Mark noted all the breakfasts and the forums and all of that that kind of seemed to go hand in hand with being a congressman. Why do you suppose people seem to be so down on public servants these days? Politicians?
Well, I think that there's a lot of basis. I mean, it's one of the only places they get to have a voice in terms of what happens and affects their life. Other institutions, the church, not to criticize the church, but corporations that are merging, other things are really pretty much out of their control. There isn't the, you know, and I think they look to a government to probably have played a role in terms of controlling that and limiting it. But so it's one place where they get to take out sort of their rage or take out their concerns. And so we obviously face it. Now, I'm not complaining about that. I understand skepticism is a very important part of public service, you know, that better off asking tough questions of Bruce Vento or whoever else is representing you in the United States Congress, Senator House, or at the in the presidency. So that's really a part of it. But I think the public service issue has suffered a lot. I mean, that was one of the highest aspirations. It's one of, obviously, my sort of fun values is to, you know, develop your talents and then put them to work to, for others, and maybe in public education, maybe in the private sector. There's roles to do this. Certainly in elective office, I was always schooled on the idea that that was really the highest place that we can do it. And I must say that those talents have been sorely tested over the 24 years. There isn't much that I learned either in formal schooling or in the school of hard knocks that didn't get put to use in working in the United States Congress. So it really permitted me to engage. I'm really grateful for the support that I had to use and to put to work those talents for people and for trying to help. And but it is somewhat of a dismaying thing, you know. It's sort of the term limits, all the other things that come down. Obviously, we know every 2 years that somebody's going to go around the district and say some things that are less than generous about you. That's part of the election cycle. I accept that and understand it. You'd like to obviously raise that dialogue to issues rather than to the emotional things that often characterize campaigns. But we know it comes with the territory. The Saturday mornings, the time put in. I don't complain about it. I very much enjoyed and took great rewards from the role I had to play in terms of connecting with people, bringing them together. That's part of a member of Congress. That's really what we do in terms of bringing people around to work and to come to a common policy to gain the 50+1 votes that you need in the House or the Senate to get something passed, to try and reconcile issues and solve problems. As I say, the job should be simple in terms of taking new knowledge and translating it into public policy, but there's a lot of other aspects that impact upon that in terms of whether constituents understand it. I always remember my first campaign, and I was going to explain the all the elements of the Dutch elm disease, sort of. It was a hopeless case, and my folks around me said, "Well, I don't know if they can take quite that much truth right now, Bruce." You know, but it was that type of approach and idealism that I suppose, and to some extent, naivete. That affected you in terms of when you're and the lessons you learned down the road in terms of how to go about doing things is also very important, not just having knowledge.
You always hear that people in Congress really all they care about is getting reelected. Is that true?
Well, I mean, you do care about it. I think though that most of us, it's the time in between the elections that's important that we get a chance to work in public policy and develop it. There's a lot of bipartisan efforts. You hear about the controversies because those are the obviously that's a lot more interesting to the media than the things that we might or issues we may get along on. But you know, we're always striving to try and achieve consensus, and you don't do that by making something a partisan issue. Quite the contrary. When I was working on homeless legislation, I was, even though the Democrats were in the majority, we had Ronald Reagan to get Ronald Reagan to sign the bill. So I was really working with some of my counterparts on the Republican side to achieve a consensus and something that would be, and of course it was an issue of the time. It was the only social program that then President Reagan signed into law during his 8 years. So I was, you know, was the point person in the House and the Senate on that issue, and named it after my Republican colleague Stuart McKinney, who passed away incidentally during his service, and but had been a friend and a supporter, and we were trying to reach out to build the type of bipartisan coalition. So there's a lot of controversy, and there's a lot of issue in terms of we do want to get reelected. That's one of the motivations in terms of pleasing people, but they don't have to. That doesn't have to be separate from doing a good job, and it certainly shouldn't be. It isn't just all, you know, window dressing. A lot of it, I think, can be based on substance. And I think that was my goal, and I think the goal most persons want to do is they want to do substantive things that will, in fact, help them with their elections, but also help the people they represent, more importantly.
If they have to choose, most people, yourself, set yourself aside. I mean, just remembering back on your colleagues, if they have to choose between a vote that will really hurt them, but yeah, they think maybe it's good for the country.
Well, we had a lot of those votes, especially in 93, President Clinton's first year, in terms of the tax bills. And even before that, I would say the present economic circumstance we're in really gets back to when President Bush had to modify his political goals to the reality of what was facing our nation. We put in place certain types of tax changes, which obviously he lost the election over that, but he took the course. He also took the course of taking on the S&L problems that existed, which his predecessor and other regulators would not deal with, and perhaps Congress should have been pushed further to do. But so I saw the president, there was a Republican president that had stood up a couple of times on things that were tough to do. But in the end, I think he made the right decisions. If they politically couldn't handle it, I don't think that they were the difference. But most often, I think there has to be a core. I mean, obviously, anyone that is, if you're looking over your shoulder all the time, worried about the next election, that's tough. And I think that this district has given and provided me the type of support over these years that has permitted me to do that. But I think it's also establishing the rapport, establishing confidence and lines of communication where people don't always agree with you. That's for certain. That's not likely. But you build a type of rapport where they will give you the benefit of the doubt and understand that they're electing someone to take a public opinion poll every week and follow it. They're electing your best judgment. That's really what they need, and they expect us to do our homework. They expect us to do their homework. I've seen a lot of examples where people have been reluctant to do the work, reluctant to spend the political capital. Certainly in that course, but you're always, at various times it was me too. I don't always attest to be as good as some of this press has been the last couple of weeks. It's been very generous, and believe me, I've had plenty of faults that I'm sure could be pointed to in terms of those 24, 30 years in the state legislature and in the U.S. House.
Congressman Bruce Vento is our guest this hour, and we'll get to some more callers right after news headlines. Here's Marianne Sullivan. Marianne.
Thank you, Gary. The polls are open in Delaware, where voters are casting ballots in today's GOP primary. At one point, Steve Forbes bumped into a sister of George W. Bush at a campaign stop. John McCain and Alan Keyes are also on the ballot. President Clinton is barring federal agencies from discriminating against workers on the basis of genetic tests. The executive order is in response to fears that advances in medical research could be abused. British officials say authorities have not ruled out the possibility that the hijackers of an Afghan plane may be seeking asylum. A second day of negotiations is underway with the hijackers, who are holding at least 150 hostages. Minnesota Senate Republicans want to post information about certain sex offenders on the Internet and set stiffer penalties for gun crimes. The Republican anti-crime agenda includes a bill that would allow judges to set sentences that would keep sex offenders in prison if they have a high risk of committing more crimes. Legislation expanding the eligibility for Minnesota's senior prescription drug program gets its first hearing in a House committee tonight. Republican Representative Jim Abler of Anoka says only 2,000 Minnesota seniors are participating in a program designed to help 17,000. He says his bill would broaden access to the program. Abler says the state should also shorten the application form. House and Senate DFLers also support raising the asset limit to allow more seniors to qualify for the program. A new study by the Mayo Clinic finds that your mental attitude could have a lot to do with your physical health and longevity. 50,000 patients were given a test in the 1960s, and the results seem to show the most pessimistic among them tended to die earlier than the most optimistic. The study is being reported today in the Mayo Clinic proceedings. Hormel Foods Corporation, owner of Heartland Foods of Marshall, is appealing the city's 1998 estimated market value of Heartland property on 1999 taxes. Hormel is requesting a 49% reduction in the valuation from nearly $2.5 million to $1.3 million. A court date has been set for May. Clouds in the north, a chance of sleet or snow in the northeast, partly cloudy and breezy in southern Minnesota today. Mid-30s in the far north, around 50 in the southwest, partly sunny and breezy for the Twin Cities with a high near 40. Partly sunny now, 29 degrees. And Gary, that's the latest from the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.
Thanks, Marianne. It's 26 minutes before 1 o'clock. This is Midday on Minnesota Public Radio, and our guest this hour is Minnesota 4th District Congressman Bruce Vento, who announced last week that he will not be seeking re-election this year. He served 24 years, well, coming up on 24 years in the U.S. Congress, representing the St. Paul area in Congress. Congressman Vento has been diagnosed with a nasty form of cancer, and so he's going to be devoting his time to being treated for the disease. He's come by today to talk about his career in Congress, and if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000, outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. Congressman, before we get back to our callers, I should ask you, there have been as soon as the announcement came out, of course, speculation began immediately as to who might succeed you, and there have been some suggestions that the whole process has been a little unseemly, that people should have waited a little while. What do you think?
Well, I can appreciate people's concern for my own feelings about it, my feelings were that when I announced, I had intended to give notice to everyone, all the candidates that might be in either political party or independents, and I fully expected that to happen. I think it's necessary. They got to get in contact with 300,000 people in the 4th District, which is a big area. And the, you know, the caucuses are coming up March 12th for the Democrats. Now the Republicans, I think, have theirs a little earlier in there, and so the, but the issue, I think, is the 7th or the 8th, the Tuesday night before that for them. And so I expected that. I mean, I'd be more concerned if people weren't interested in running for Congress based on the way that you know, sometimes the tenor of the times has not been very positive about the Congress. It's a tough place now, especially as a Democrat. It's been a different challenge these last 5 years with the Republican leadership, and obviously I've had my disagreements and fights with that. But so I'm just pleased that people are willing to get in and make the commitment. You know, I think that we want them all to understand the nature of what the role will be in the campaign. So we've actually tried to respond to those questions. But generally, I've been very pleased with the quality and the really the which I think is the best and the brightest of some of those in the DFL that are talking about running or have already announced that they're running. So I've been, I'm not offended by that. I understand that that's a very much a part of the what happens in the process, and they need to get out and do that and make those contacts. And begin that process now. It's not there aren't that much, there isn't that much time between now and November for them to get in contact with 300,000 people. We don't want to just leave this for those that might be have the income or wealth or celebrity status to be the to be considered for Congress. So most, you know, the common folk that are there that don't have that need the time to contact people and develop the type of support within their parties. And to make a good run for an important job.
Are you going to be supporting one of the candidates?
Well, I look forward to the, you know, what, how this evolves and comes out, and I may, you know, support them. Obviously, individuals really have to run on their own. I think there's a lot of concern about, you know, in the, about individuals like myself getting involved and trying to steer or direct, you know, who would be the candidate. So I want to be very careful about that. Obviously, I'm a Democrat. I expect that I would support the Democrat candidate that has, you know, labor support. And, you know, hopefully, I'm certain that, you know, hope that they can avoid a contentious primary, but I suppose it's unrealistic to see there wouldn't be any. And so I hope that we can come together and elect a good candidate that can represent many of the same views and values that that I've had and been working on in Congress. I have an interest. I understand that there won't be another Bruce Vento. There wasn't. I wasn't Joe Carth, and I'm not Gene McCarthy, who preceded me in this role, as you well know. And but I mean, everyone has their own strengths in this, and I think that constituents have to look to those and look to who can, you know, carry on and represent the concerns that they have in a special way. Obviously, I had some unusual strengths. And some weaknesses, I suppose, to be candid. And I think that the same is obviously going to be true of any individual that fills that role. But there's a place. It's a great job. I think it's a wonderful place to work. I leave Congress with, as I look to the end of this term and working through it, with many positive feelings. I've seen so many members of Congress leave that are bitter. Maybe it's their, maybe it's illness, maybe it's other factors, but I really don't feel that way. It's a great institution. I think we need to get over the trying to limit people in terms. This isn't passing milk out in kindergarten. I mean, this is important, and if you want to strengthen the legislative process, having people with experience like the Martin Sabos, the Jim Obistars, the Bill Frenzels that we've had in the past, and others, you know, the Jim Ramseds that are there today, it's important to recognize the experience that they have, that they bring, where they can actually challenge a park superintendent or a park director or a bank regulator or someone that's working in HUD as a regulator. The Andrew Cuomo's, obviously, when Andrew and Cuomo or Jack Kemp came before Bruce Vento, they didn't get a free pass. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were asked tough questions. Jack couldn't quite understand why I wasn't a little more friendly at the time. He feared, in a sense, but that's good. I mean, I think our job in life is not to eliminate anxiety. Our job is to do our task, and I think that the members of Congress that do their work and know their information on financial institutions and other, some of these issues that are tougher to deal with, it's important that they do that. And you have to make judgments about people when they are serving, whether they're establishing that type of a role. So it isn't just a free pass. I mean, each 2 years we have to go back and kind of convince folks. But, you know, developing that type of experience is an essential part of strengthening and keeping a strong Congress. And in this past 100 years, you know, the presidency has gained much more power. But one check on that power is a knowledgeable Congress and a independent Congress, whether it's a Sam Rayburn or a Tip O'Neill Congress or others. We talked about strong and weak speakers. You know, Carl Elbert, God rest his soul, didn't have the same strength that, for instance, his predecessor had and or O'Neill. So it's looking to that, you know, and of course Gingrich had the power, obviously. It's a question, I think, in a lot of people's mind how it gets used and whether or not that was good at that time or not. But in any case, I think that having a strong Congress is very important, and that's one of the elements of that is experience. Not experience alone, but experience. Not experience that uses that or abuses that power and won't permit bills or measures to come up for a vote. That's another matter, and Congress can deal and has dealt, or the public can deal and has dealt with that.
What about you know, your list of all the Minnesota congressmen who've been in office now for some long while? And it does seem like once you, if you can get elected the first time,
yeah,
you're almost guaranteed re-election until you decide not to run again.
Well,
should the system be a little more competitive?
Well,
in some way?
You know, I think there are a lot of aspects to that in terms of funding of campaigns and public funding, but I think in the element we sort of got a mixture of it in terms of limiting amounts, but clearly they can be challenged. I mean, the fact is that the Republicans have spent more running against me in the last 5 years than they spent against any other DFL incumbent in office, and I'm glad they did it. It didn't work. They could maybe have spent it someplace else, and it might have done them more good. So I don't think that they're convinced that they didn't have a shot, and so they're up there, they're working, and I think it just depends whether, you know, when you get in politics, it's a risk to run for office, and it's a risk to continue to run for office, and so I don't think anyone feels so comfortable that they understand. And of course, one of the issues here is from within the party. You know, you can get primaries, and clearly in some districts that's more of a threat perhaps than the opposite party. But with the type of changes and volatility we've had in Minnesota, at the gubernatorial level and the rise of parties, the association and fidelity to parties isn't what it was for whatever reason, and that's another factor. So there's plenty of opportunity. The Congress turns over enormously. I mean, if you look at who is serving and who isn't, I mean, clearly half the members of Congress have served less than 4 years. I mean, that's a lot of change, and I think having some experience, some institutional memory, which is checked and held accountable by constituencies, is enormously important. I mean, there isn't anyone in the United States Congress that understands the FAA and some of the policies surrounding it better than Jim Oberstar. And Jim is a phenomenal resource in terms of these issues. Of course, I wish he'd listen to me sometimes a little more on some other topic, but we've come to reconcile, and he's a good friend. And the same is true with Congressman Sable and his work on budget and other matters of this nature and the appropriation process. And he just is, you know, it's just a great source of strength in terms of the Congress generally.
Next caller is from Grand Portage. Gordon?
Yes, good afternoon, Congressman Vento.
I'm a Gordon.
St. Paul boy, born there in 1920, reared and educated until drafted in the Navy during World War II. I'm currently living on an Indian reservation here in Grand Portage, and the Indian culture has elevated my sensitivity to the environment, and I want to congratulate you on your efforts in Congress to protect the environment. And as a retired Lutheran pastor, I'm also happy to note that the church is taking increased interest in activity in the environment. And then also on a personal note, I just wanted to share with you, I lost my right eye due to a melanoma 5 years ago. I've had triple bypass surgery, two total knees. And as a member of the Order of St. Luke, the physician, what's interesting on the newscast today, when they said how our spiritual or mental attitude does affect our body, I just wanted to let you know I'll be praying for you.
Yeah.
And in the Order of St. Luke, we say two simple things. Hmm. God is able. We just pray that he's willing. Hmm. And I just want to leave those thoughts.
Well, thank you very much, Gordon, for those thoughts and that help. I agree. I think that the type of expressions of public or support that have occurred the last week are greatly of great help. And to me, not just to me, but to my family, who you can imagine, I have three sons that are adults and three daughter-in-laws and three grandchildren, three boys. We're expecting a fourth, a fifth grandchild this spring, and I'm going to have a granddaughter. And so these public expressions have been very helpful to them and to my family, who obviously you know, see you as maybe being a little unappreciated. My mother's always been, of course, protective and not wanting me in politics because I might be criticized for something, probably which I deserve to be criticized for, but not in my mother's eyes. So, I mean, it's been a great, you know, in that sense, this public expressions. And I agree on the environment. I think there's a growing awareness and a growing importance to these policies and their interrelatedness to many other things that we do, whether it's road building, transportation, many other aspects of our conduct that that need to be reconciled with this. And the Native American people have always been a it's been a disappointment to see some of the problems that they've encountered and their inability to practice what I think is their values with regards to the environment and the ecosystems. And clearly I'm on the science part of that, but I think there is also a value laden issue dealing with the environment in terms of how we treat you know, sort of Mother Earth in the words of Native Americans.
Pam's on the line from Side Lake. Go ahead, Pam.
Good morning, Congressman Pinto.
Good morning, Pam.
I just wanted to, I guess, echo what the previous caller said. I want to thank you for all the work you've done protecting the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness, for the millions and millions of people who have used it, and for being the environmental standard bearer, I guess, for a lot of people in the state who value the wilderness. I know it has not always been an easy issue to deal with because it's been very contentious and at times very nasty and all those things, but I know you've been very instrumental. Many of the environmental groups that I'm involved in have met with you many times and could count on you to deal with the issue in a logical and straightforward way, and I want to thank you for all that you've done for the Boundary Waters and for other environmental issues, and hope we have you back kicking butt pretty soon.
Well, thanks. I talked to the president last week. He called me and expressed his, you know, thanks and concern about my health, and I, of course, related to him that we both would not be on the ballot this year, and so there might be a life after being elective office. We can't maybe participate in the campaigns for different reasons this fall. I think he's got another campaign he's concerned about in New York, too. But in any case, that we would have some opportunity to serve perhaps beyond this if our health and vitality and so forth are there to do it. But I would say, you know, the Boundary Waters and the environment, obviously, and these landscape issues have been a real passion for me. For 10 years, I chaired the Parks and Public Lands Committee and had the chance to work on over 300 or 400 measures that were enacted into law under Republican and Democrat presidents, bipartisan measures. So we really had the chance to be at the top here, but you can't do that without grassroots support, without an interest by the electorate and by people in these matters, and that's really what the strength is. While I've been helpful in terms of trying to develop that types of conservation ethic, that concern, as I say, in terms of preserving what's natural, conserving what we use, and restoration of those things that we've damaged, that's really what has to be sort of the policy and creed. But that has to happen within the constituency. I can't do that alone. As I say, anything I've accomplished, it's really been standing on the shoulders of many people like yourselves that maintain an interest and an understanding and fidelity to this matter, making it an issue in political campaigns. The environment doesn't rank very high in most campaigns. You know, we're most concerned about our Social Security, about our health care, about our education. All those are important. But I think we need to really expand that list and expand the dialogue and give people understanding that. And I said one of the reasons in terms of frustration is people feel that they've been disempowered, but they can be empowered. That's the national Congress that plays that role, and nobody else can play that role. The state has a very, very important aspect and role to play, but nobody can do the transboundary types of problems.
The federal government afford to do all the things that have been traditionally put in the liberal column and still keep a balanced budget, still be fiscally responsible, or do you really have to pick and choose?
Well, I don't know. I mean, part of it isn't just federal dollars being expended. A lot of the work that we do, I think, is really, I mean, for instance, we don't have an EPA in Minnesota. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency fills that particular role, but they do it to the national standards that satisfy the concerns of air standards, water standards that are consistent with these policies that have been developed, Gary. So it's a question of trying to make the government work in a sophisticated world that we live in today. Everyone would like to have it more simple, but it's not going to happen by wishing it so. But I do think we must deal with most of those issues, because if you don't pay for them now, we're going to pay for them later, and it's going to cost a lot more in the end, in terms of keeping our rivers clean, addressing the types of problems that are going on in the Great Lakes that might exist. So it's I think it isn't a choice. I think there is a balance that can be attained here that is important. And you know, very often the questions really complement one another. Less more efficient use of fuel means you purchase less of it, less carbon burning. So I think moving in this direction actually very often is not just makes sense for the environment, but it makes sense on the bottom line as well. So I think the national government can and should play that role. It's a question of how they relate to the states. And, you know, we don't have Fish and Wildlife Services working with the Department of Natural Resources in Minnesota. There isn't necessarily many have tried to build up this confrontation issue between them, when, in fact, more often it's cooperation that really is the byword that exists here.
Dave, your question, please.
Yeah, well, I would also like to echo what everybody has said and thank the congressman for all his work on the environment, but particularly housing, which I don't think there's a lot of people who don't know how hard he's worked on that issue. And I'm a longtime admirer of the congressman, having lived in St. Paul and then later in Washington County. But the question I have is that the congressman has learned his subject so well, I mean, to great detail. How do you get other elected officials to pick up, to learn those subjects that they're voting on in the details that they really need to know them? It's almost like, how do you lobby Congress? What's the best way to do it, or what's the worst way to do it?
Well, I think they start out with good hearings in Congress. One of the things I would criticize what's been lacking in recent years is we don't have hearings on housing issues. You can't expect members to learn unless you'll be able to present both sides of an issue or all sides of the issue and spend a lot of time in hearings. I mean, I've spent a lot of time sitting in hearings and trying to learn. And believe me, I'm also, of course, probably an overcompensator. I understand that I'm not, I'm just an average guy that got put in an unusual or extraordinary job in terms of Congress. So I never felt overconfident that I knew too much about something. Like one of my mentors used to say, he said, you should be a humble man. You got plenty to be humble about. So it does spur you on to, and it really is a wonderful role. The role of working in Congress as a member is really that of a student. I mean, we're put in a position where we can learn and can come to grips with the issues that are before us, whether it's in tax policy, health policy, and it really, individuals, you have to expect that. I always felt that my constituents expected the best of me and my effort in these areas. Obviously, sometimes you get into some criticism. I also remember an experience when we were getting into the Iraqi conflict with Kuwait, and I went to a meeting at McAllister. I had an oil expert with me, and one of my constituents stood up and said, "Well, Bruce, we've heard, we know what's going on here. We've been listening to CNN. We know," which was sort of interesting. It sort of belies the fact that, you know, that members of Congress really need to understand some of the foreign policy issues a little better. And, for instance, in my 20 years, I've traveled around the world, frankly, and it's very important members get out and travel. I spent, you know, talked to 50,000 people in Belgrade talking about local elections, and when you have elections at the local level, that's when Milosevic, of course, was in power, still is in power, traveled to various parts of the world, working with the European Union, our counterparts in it, talking about the environment, talking about trade. Members really need to exercise and have the opportunity to do that type of travel, to, you know, to have good hearings. I mean, we ought to be looking at the quality of hearings and the quality of product. And that really is the greatest strength when more members understand these issues in the Congress, then fewer, it doesn't gravitate to just a few people in the House and Senate into a conference committee, or you don't have to yield to administration. Very often, members of Congress, in my mind's eye, really know more about some of the public policy issues than people that are in appointed positions, such as the secretaries. Although I think Cuomo has a pretty good grasp of housing, Cisneros was okay, others had, you know, less talents in those areas, and I think that probably you can know by their backgrounds, you know.
Mm-hmm. Before we wrap up here, let's get at least one more caller on. Richard, go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, Congressman.
Good afternoon, Richard.
I just wanted to say again a thank you for your 24 years of leadership in our Congress, and really needed that to take care of all the problems which you helped a lot with, particularly in the wildlife area.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to say that my thoughts are going to be with you because I've been diagnosed with mesothelioma, too, just a few days before Christmas.
Yeah. Wow.
And although mine's in the abdominal area.
Yeah.
And it's say this is a very rare cancer. There's 2 cases per million per year. Well, I know of 2 cases already.
Yeah, it's getting more common, unfortunately.
And mine's in a little more advanced stage than yours. So my thoughts are going to be with you as you go through your treatment, and I hope yours are with me for mine.
They certainly will be, and I, you know, obviously hope that I can play a little more role in terms of public awareness, and perhaps you and I both as examples of folks that are fighting with this and doing it successfully. Thanks for your comments, and just on housing, on issues, you know, I've worked so hard on so many issues in Social Security. I was one of Claude Pepper's lieutenants trying to protect the Social Security system throughout the 1980s, and today, I mean, members must, you know, I think that I appreciate the acknowledgments and well wishes here today and the support for my role in housing and many of these issues that are bread and butter issues to the folks. Obviously, I had this great passion and work in the environment, but as I, you know, as I look to this last year of service and the challenges I have ahead, I'm just very grateful for the support that I've had in this community. I think it's been wonderful, and I think that type of support and expectations, this standard of public service that we have had in Minnesota, it's no accident that some of the leadership that we've got come out of this state, that we've taken people from the factories in the east side of St. Paul or the mines of northern Minnesota or the farms of Minnesota and Dakotas like Martin Szabo and many others out of walks of life and give them the opportunity to serve and to really represent us. I think we really reflect what is really the ideal of our constitutional and democracy in terms of government taking people from these walks of life, and I feel my heart is really full when I look at the opportunities that I've had in this state and throughout this community that people have given me that type of support. And this outpouring the last couple of weeks has really been overwhelming, and it's a major factor in terms of buoying me. I only wish that folks like the gentleman that just questioned that has the same type of problem I have. I hope they get just some of that support and they feel part and a little bit of ownership of having been part of my career in terms of voting for me or supporting me or being represented or being taught by me like that one seventh grade student. Wasn't that great, Gary?
Yeah.
To feel that, you know, unfortunately, most teachers never receive that type of feedback, and it's just important how important the different roles that we play as teachers, as parents, in our everyday life. Fortunately, in public office, we get the credit for a lot of it and the acknowledgement, and it has been a very, very rewarding career in terms of public service, and I hope we will uphold the standard of public service rather than get lost in some of the details of other matters that seem to affect and embrace the political process too often. Thanks to everyone that has been on the program and to the great expressions of positive expressions that have erupted really this last week. I'm overwhelmed, and it was certainly unexpected, but I'm very grateful for it.
Congressman, thank you so much for coming in today, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Thanks, Gary.
Got our fingers crossed.
Yeah, we'll be talking. We'll be out there speaking and acting.
Minnesota 4th District Congressman Bruce Vento joining us for the second hour of our midday program. Congressman Vento has announced that he will not be seeking re-election. He spent 24 years in the Congress, but unfortunately, he has been diagnosed with a nasty form of cancer, and he's going to spend his time and energy trying to deal with that problem.